Good morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I hope everyone's enjoyed our weather sampler this past week. We went from winter to spring. We got a little taste of summer. Then we went back to spring and it snowed yesterday, right? So winter. And I think it's officially spring today. So I don't know about you. I got a little confused, but I enjoyed it. Only here in Wisconsin. My name's Lynn Smith. I'm the representative from the church board this morning. We have a variety of announcements about church life. The Green Sanctuary Committee will meet today after coffee to plan for the Heartland Stone Bank Independence Day parades and plan for April 18th Earth Day service and any other ideas. The room that they'll meet in will be announced at coffee. We will again have a rummage and plant sale on Friday and Saturday, May 14th and 15th. This will be our fourth annual sale, and it's a good way to bring in outside money for a fundraiser. We will need your help in donating items, organizing the items, pricing them, advertising, and selling. You can read about it in the April newsletter. We need two people to co-chair this event. See either Esther Flakis or Kaz. Take a moment to give them a hand. In the pews, you'll find an envelope with hands in them. You can fill those out to recognize volunteer contributions to our church. The completed hands can be placed in the offertory basket, or there's a box in the back of the sanctuary on your way out. Then you'll see them hung in the front foyer there. Please bring in canned goods over the next 3 weeks for our Easter canned good hunt. All cans will be donated to a local food pantry after the Easter hunt. Please see Carrie Duma with any questions. There will be a meeting at 11:30 today in the high school room for high schools and their parents to discuss an upcoming social action event and plans for a possible summer trip. And there will be apples to eat. Duke Wagner has an announcement.
Hi. I wanted to take a moment to describe some of the exciting things that are happening with our AV and sound equipment, thanks to some marvelous benefactors here at the church. First of all, Patty Walker, in honor of Mike, donated some money to help us put in some AV stuff. And above you on the ceiling, which we did use once already for a service, is the projector that that her contribution supported, and a laptop computer to drive it. And I just wanted to acknowledge Patty and Mike and say thank you. And then Robin Reed has been supporting sound upgrades, and we have some new equipment which we're going to install later than today, a new mixing board and an amp that Robin has contributed to in a memorial to his wife Edith. And so I wanted to acknowledge Robin and say thank you for that as well. And new mic like this, and so we'll have much more capability to support what we do here and hear ourselves without and all that stuff. The last thing is that some of the families here have seen the medieval fighting that we do at the magical dinner at KM. The group that supported that is going to start practice today at noon in Waukesha North High School, for anybody who's interested, see me after.
Thank you. We have a variety of announcements in our order of service, so if you take a look at those, there's one from Josh Cowles. He needs help from members in the congregation with a sermon that he and Jane and Jeff are planning in May. I think the email's wrong, is that right?
Yeah, it should be
J.M. Coles. Okay, it should be J.M., not M. Coles, J.M. Coles. So let Josh know. There's also a message about our ordination of Lori Lobbin on May 1st, and then there's some information about the stewardship committee. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. I can Okay. I don't know. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. So if any members have brought guests with them today, we would be pleased to meet them. Or if you're a guest who've brought yourself today and would be comfortable introducing yourself, this would be a good time to do so. We would really enjoy meeting you. Dan, welcome. Well, we particularly welcome our guests. There's a guest ledger on the welcome table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on the table about our church and Unitarian Universalism, so help yourself to any of that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like to become a member, I'd be happy to help you or talk to you about that as well. If you're visiting us with your children, it's our custom for the kids to remain in the service until after the offertory, at which time the children go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them, or they could remain in the service with you. Or if you'd like to go observe your child's class, you're welcome to do that. We have a nursery just outside the doors to my right over here if you need child care during the service. Everyone's invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation, and it looks like we have a special treat. Bill Lizdis took pictures of our church retreat a few weeks ago, and it looks like they're playing on a TV out there. So enjoy the pictures, and thank you, Bill. Please put your cell phones on silent mode now. And I hope you find today's service rejuvenating. Our minister, Reverend Jane, is going to help us welcome in spring. Hallelujah. We do have, as part of our stewardship campaign, we'd like to welcome Joanne Nelson to the front to share her testimonial.
Good morning. Well, many of you probably know me best as the queen goddess of the Lingering Goddess Brewing Company, the company that is taking a celestial sabbatical from this year's brewing contest to allow some of the other more mortal male teams to have a chance at some of the prizes. But I'm much more than that. I'm also an anxiety-ridden mess when it comes to, like giving 2-minute speeches at church. In fact, those with a discerning eye may get to see my knees shake in the next minute and 27 seconds. And those with a carefully attuned ear may hear the wobble in my voice in the next minute and 18 seconds. I think it was there. And it's this extreme anxiety that makes me support our church. Perhaps there's a better way to put that. Way back in the day, when I first joined LCUUC, I really disliked public speaking. But I wanted to change that. So I joined the very first worship committee, volunteered to help with sermons, and generally got in front of the church a lot. And I learned to talk about things that scare me. And I learned a lot of us are scared. And then I learned to talk about what I believe in and listen to others' beliefs. And I learned some people are really different. I haven't only done things that terrorize me at church. I love to read and teach and learn. So sometimes I lead book groups or get on committee for children's RE or adult enrichment. On rare occasions, I'm brave enough to chair a committee. So sometimes I do things I shine at. However I'm ready to grow, this church is here to support me. When I'm willing to push myself, there are plenty of opportunities and people to help me on that path. When I just need to sit back for a while, the church is here to simply be with me. And at the times when I've been really hurting, this church has been here to embrace me. Thank you.
The opening words this morning are from Barbara Peskin. For the beauty of the earth, the spinning blue-green ball, yes. Gaia, mother of everything, we walk gently across your back to come together again in this place, to remember how we can live, to remember who we are, to create how we will be. Gaia, our home, the lap in which we live, welcomes us. This is now the time in the service for the children of all ages to come up and hear the story. So let's see. I can do this. Well, good morning. See if I can, if you can hear me. I'm going to read a story today that is a Yiddish story, and a Yiddish person is somebody who is Jewish, and they come from different parts of the world, and they don't only speak Hebrew, but they speak a dialect of Hebrew, which is called Yiddish. And what I'm going to be talking to the adults today about is about attitude. Do you know what attitude means? What does it mean? It's about your personality and your behavior. And so you can think really sad thoughts, like think some really, really sad thoughts right now, just quietly to yourself. What colors do you see in your head if you think what? Blue. What other colors do you think, what do you see when you think sad thoughts?
Purple.
Do you see any other colors? How about if you have mad, angry thoughts? What colors? Go ahead.
Red.
Red. What color? Oh, that's your color too.
Orange.
Orange. Do you have a color that you see when you're mad? You just feel like taking your hat off? I understand. But if you're thinking happy thoughts, what? Think some happy thoughts. And what colors?
Red, yellow.
Again, oh my gosh, and green. What are some other happy colors?
Gold.
So did you feel the difference inside of yourself when you felt mad or sad, and then when you thought happy? Could you feel a little bit of a difference inside of yourself? That is your attitude. And so you can feel a particular way, and sometimes you can't change that feeling very quickly because it's a very heavy feeling, or it's a very happy feeling. But sometimes you do have control over that, and a lot of times you have control over your attitude. And so you can shift something from being bad or sad or negative or crabby into being positive and hopeful and happy. So I'm going to read a story that has to do with that. This is a folk tale. This is a story about a villager, and a villager is a person who lives in what? What? You can just, a village. Exactly. This is a story about a villager who once complained incessantly about his lot in life. And your lot in life is kind of how life looks for you. Over and over, he would look at his neighbors, each of whom appeared more fortunate, luckier than he was, wishing that he could trade his life for theirs. And finally, after many years, the man was visited by an angel who came to grant him his fondest wish. "Gather all your troubles into a sack and bring them to the outskirts of the village," the angel said. "And there you will be free to trade in your sack for any bag of troubles in the pile." Cheered at last by the hope of a rosier future, the villager hurried along carrying his great sack of problems. Every step of the way, the man's sack seemed to feel heavier and heavier. And at last, the weight became so great he could barely advance. He could barely walk forward. But the anticipation of soon being able to trade in his sack for another, assuredly less burdensome than his own, kept his feet moving one before the other. And as he trudged slowly down the dirt road, he thought of the traveling storyteller, whose freedom to come and go as he wished was surpassed by none. Nobody had more freedom than the storyteller. He thought of the village elder, the oldest person in the village, whose wisdom and power had surely gotten rid of the boring disappointments of everyday life. And as the villager arrived, the angel relieved him, took his burden, and threw it into the great pile of sacks gathered from everyone the poor man had ever envied and wished that he was like. The angel then instructed him to take as much time as he would like, selecting in exchange whichever sack he wished to bring home with him in trade, so he could choose any sack on the pile. The villager rushed to the mountain of sacks and began lifting and judging and weighing the size and the heft of each sack.
for one day and one night. He raised and he pinched and he squeezed and he rolled, and he was determined to seek out the lightest burden in the pile. Partway through the second day, the villager found it, the perfect sack. There was no doubt in his mind. It was so much smaller and loosely packed than all of the rest. He was certain that he had found the lightest burden of all. The angel, standing by, smiled broadly at the villager, showed him the sack of troubles of his choice. "This is the sack you want? Yes, you may take it home with you," says the angel. The sack felt so light, it felt to the man as though it were filled with air. He juggled it, and he danced it, and he bounced along with it all the way home. And then, at long last, with great anticipation, he threw it open to see whose contents he had taken in exchange for his own. Would it be the butcher's, the storyteller's? He opened the sack and peered inside. And the terrible truth dawned upon him. He had chosen his own sack of troubles from the mountain of disappointments. He had judged his own sack to be the lightest and least burdensome of all. So what happened then? He lived out the rest of his days accepting as his portion the limitations, disappointments, troubles, and anxieties that he had tried to trade away, and he never again complained. Because what did he discover? What happened? What?
That to him, his sack of troubles is lighter or less full than all the other ones.
His sack of troubles, and what does that mean about his life?
His life has less disappointment than some of the other.
Right. And so when you ever feel sad or mad or angry or something, or disappointed, or think that someone else has something better than you, or they have a better toy, or a prettier shirt, or you wanted that gift and you didn't get it and someone else has it, or someone else has more freedom in their life than they do, gosh, they get to go on a sleepover and I never do, things like that. You can think, well, you can feel sad and terrible about it, but maybe they have other things in their lives that are also disappointing to them. And we all just have to balance that all of the time and to remember it, that we're never the only one. That is the story for the day. Go and be positive and happy on this joyful spring day. All right, we are going to sing the first hymn of the morning. It is number 367, Allelu, Allelu, and we are going to sing it two times through. Please stand if you are able and willing. It is now time in our service for the offertory, and as always, when we have this offertory, we are remembering who we are as a congregation. We are helping to nurture and sustain this congregation, and we are also providing hope and continuity for this denomination, this religion, and for our community and what we have to offer. Thank you.
This is the time in our service for joys and concerns, and everybody is invited to share a joy or a concern, and what you do is you just raise your hand and somebody will come by with a microphone. And to begin this portion, I will just light a candle in memory of all of the, and remembrance of all of the hardships and tragedies and devastations that occur on a daily basis in people's personal lives and in the world at large.
This would have been my husband Wally's birthday today. It's going to be a happy day. We're going to have a birthday party for his grand dog, Sam. There will be party hats, balloons, and gifts because Sam loves to open gifts.
I'm Patty Walker, and this is my daughter, Nora. Please light a candle for my husband, Mike, who passed away 1 year ago yesterday.
Mom and I just wanted to thank you guys so much for all of your hope and support. You guys took care of us the way Dad would have wanted it. Thank you so much, this entire congregation. We couldn't have done it without you.
Hi, I'm Angel. A candle of joy. I am so grateful. Yesterday was such a beautiful day. I had a grand opening of my gallery, and it was jam-packed, despite the noticeable absence of people like Gary, Greg, and Esther, and Jerry. Anyways, I'm not holding grudges, but they are grounded. It was just packed. It was such a beautiful day, and it was so joyful. And, of course, Sammy was there, and I was looking at her with a crowd around her thinking, we so deserve this. We really, really do. And very grateful for that.
My name is Marie-Claude McNulty. I have a fantastic news. Our son, Patrick, was married last week. And we love our daughter-in-law.
My name is Robin, and I just want to say that I'm really happy, and I think everybody should be, that there is a solution, not a complete one, but the solution for our health care, and that the votes are taking place today, and we'll pray for it in a Unitarian way.
Hi, I'm Dan. I'm the new guy here. And I've had rough times like all you this week, but what's really nice for me is to be sharing a morning with all these new interesting people that I don't know. So, thank you.
My name is Chris, and a candle of joy. We had at least two circle dinners last night. So, I was at the Plaza, and we had a great time there, and I think there was another group that met too. So, circle dinners are a success.
My name is Tom, and I've received two thank yous on behalf of the congregation in the past week or two, so I thought I'd forward them along. The first is from the Pewaukee Food Pantry, which is grateful for the sacks of food that we collected and the cash 2 weeks ago, I think that was. And the other thank you was from the family at 15th and Hadley that had worked from our Habitat for Humanity volunteers last Saturday.
Hi, my name's Hillary. I just wanted to say that it is always wonderful to come home from school, but also it's one of my favorite parts of coming home is when I get to come back to church, because it's really great to see all of the people that I grew up with and to share stories. And Yeah, thanks.
And this is a final candle for those joys and concerns that we keep silent to ourselves. Please join in a moment of meditation, reflection, and prayer. In the secret recesses of your heart, there is something you would love to do, but you have allowed the circumstances of your life to dim your light. You have listened to the voices of reason and of fear, allowing yourself to sacrifice your passion for safety and for acceptance. But the voice that sounded alone for so long whispers to you still, take the risk. Do something fresh, new, unexpected, daring, something that challenges those who have laid claim to you. Feel the adrenaline pulse and let your heart race. Please join now. You can remain seated in singing the meditation hymn number 386, the Alleluia Shakon. And we're also going to sing this two times. This is not correct. We're going to just sing the first line over and over and over again.
Choose problems that are worthy of you. A parable from ancient India tells the story of a farmer whose crop of wheat suffered first from locusts, then from floods. Although his family had enough to eat, they could not get ahead. The farmer turned to the gods and begged for one perfect season. Please send me plenty of sunshine, just the right amount of rain, no pests, and a gentle breeze. The farmer got exactly what he asked for. Watching his new crop of beautiful wheat grow tall, he fell to his knees to offer his gratitude. But in the distance, he heard his wife cry out. She had opened the husks and found them empty. Without resistance, the wheat had failed to produce its seed. Still on his knees, the farmer continued, "But next year, send me just enough troubles to make my wheat strong." You think you don't want problems, but if it were possible, it would not be the best thing for you. Like the wheat, you too need something to push against, to make your character strong. Surrender to the imperfection of the human condition, and you can stop wasting your energy repressing negative possibilities. You will have your full potential available to you to create and to build. To make this transition, you need only understand that as long as you are always going to have problems, you might as well begin to have problems worthy of you. Take a risk. Go for what you really want. Come to stand for something. Yesterday, I bumped into Sam, an acquaintance I hadn't seen for some time. The last time we'd spoken, he had just been passed over for a big promotion. Needless to say, he was disappointed and upset. A year had passed, but when I saw Sam again, he had that same troubled expression on his face. Was he still reeling from his bitter loss? Not at all, he replied. Several months ago, I finally got up the courage to hand in my resignation. That's terrific, I said. You made the decision to look for something better for you. But why then do you still look so concerned? The conflict is killing me, Sam answered. You see, I've received several great job offers, and I'm not sure which one to take.
The sun has returned. Gardens are becoming low carpets of yellow and purple as the crocuses burst and billow above the quiet soil of spring. The birds are singing in the trees. The skies are a clear slate for the returning geese to etch their flying wedge upon. Every body of water, small or large, is dotted once again with ducks, dipping and diving, plunging and pruning, water paddling or flinging droplets into the sun-split air as they flap their wings with joy. Ah, spring! Life after death, noise after silence, growth after stagnation, hope after despair. Winter is gone, a new season has arrived, and with that, a feeling of well-being and possibility. What is it that we feel when we feel hopeful and positive, when we feel that sense of what is possible? Is it something that exists, or is it something that is the opposite of what doesn't exist? In other words, what is the norm of life? You hear about people being negative or positive, hopeful or despairing, the glass half empty or half full. If there are these realities describing the same thing but from a different vantage point, then what is real? What is true? It is attitude. It is perception. It is construction. And what is life other than our own construction of it? And if it's our own construction, what sort of control or power or influence do we have upon it? I'm the sort of person that sees positive things in most ways of being, who can stand outside the fray and see what's possible. But I'm also the sort of person who has a hard time understanding why there's a fray in the first place. In my need for peace and hopefulness, I can all too often rail against the lack thereof. Talk about irony. We want peace, I might shout. But is shouting peaceful? No, but there can be real peace, but there cannot be real peace if there isn't something peaceful or unpeaceful that already exists. In other words, must we have tensions in order to understand and see what's possible? I heard on the radio yesterday about a book on brain science, and the premise was that consciousness doesn't exist anywhere in the brain. It is a result outside of ourselves. Consciousness is our reaction to something, but without being aware of what it is that we're responding to. It is an innate response, either by our genetic makeup, a newborn reaching upward with arms and legs to hand on to an invisible branch when they're dropped suddenly. That is a leftover response from our time living in the trees. Or is it a well-learned thing that we no longer know that we know? Playing the piano, for example, while simultaneously reading the notes. But nowhere in our conscious mind at that time are we knowing that we are telling ourselves to move our fingers, or that black mark on that line means that our fourth finger on the right hand needs to press that white key to the left of that black note. We just understand and create the music that is waiting there on the page, and under our fingers it comes out. So too is it unconscious for us to respond to violence or to tenderness, or to feel hope in our hearts, both when there is no hope, as well as when we are reminded to feel hopeful. But what about faith and about trust? Are those unconscious or conscious endeavors? Let me tell you about an incident I had early last summer when the rains were many and the rivers were high. I was spending the weekend at a small cabin on the banks of Lake Avoca, a body of water shallow and narrow with low banks and densely shadowed woods framing the shore on both sides. It's not really a lake, but rather a captured backwater of the Wisconsin River. At one end of the lake, there's a culvert and a unique underwater road made when the river has flooded and the culvert gets overwhelmed. The 5x5 cement blocks which make up this road allow a four-wheel car to cross over, the water coming only to the top of a wheel well, or which a person can traverse by carefully placing their feet, one after the other, on the tops of the algae slippery surface of the blocks, while simultaneously bracing themselves against the incessant push of the water, fighting to maintain their balance. The river at this spot is very wide, but it is not particularly deep, but it was powerful that day as it poured over the roadway and down a small incline, and it made me pay close attention and careful attention to what was happening at the moment. A good metaphor for life, I thought to myself as I faced my reluctant crossing. The clear brown water cascaded fast downward, creating a swift runout, eddies swirling in deeply broad circles before flattening and widening a bit, flowing on further upstream to become a part of the stiller waters that form the lake. When I had agreed that a nice hike out to the Avoca Prairie and then onto the shores of the Wisconsin River, I had not understood that I was going to have to walk that water road in order to get to this prairie place. Cautiously, slowly, carefully, regretfully, worried that at any moment I would lose my balance and slip and find myself plummeting downward into the rush of water and get caught in those large swirling eddies, I began the walk across. I was a good strong swimmer, but I was a Lake Superior girl, a Baltic Sea lass, a woman who was used to understanding the water that she was in, who determined for herself how wet she was going to get, who chose or chose not to take the plunge. I was not used to being in the sort of water that might at any moment make that decision for me. I was happy when I'd made it across without falling in, and I gained an immediate sense of confidence for the trip back across. No big deal. Another new experience, another new bit of learning I could add to my life. I was a person who traveled widely, sought out new experiences, new people, read voraciously, discussed things endlessly, immersed myself in life trying to figure it out, trying to do my part in it better. I am an observer and an endless seeker of the truth and of understanding. David, who I was with, on the other hand, was a person of routine, who was content with what he knew, content doing the same things and going to the same places year after year, and content in staying in Wisconsin. I mention Italy, he mentions Muscadet. I mention France or Spain or Scandinavia, and he mentions Spring Green or Mineral Point or Dodgeville. He knows about bugs and birds and plants and is often happier with the concept of eating his way through a field than going to a restaurant. Once we crossed, there was the Avoca Prairie, and David couldn't have been happier, binoculars in hand, pencil and paper at the ready. At a bend in the road where it split to the right, the grasses grew taller than me on either side, and ahead of us lay an open space, and beyond that the Wisconsin River, just below the edge of the embankment, flowing slow and quiet and incredibly wide. It was just as David had described it, a lovely place with calm waters, soft sand under our feet, a gentle current, shallow and safe. As much as he knew the flora and fauna of the prairies and woodlands, he also knew this river and its ways like the back of his hand. I followed him down the sloped bank, and in three steps we were in the water and making our way across to a small sandbank where young trees were growing. The water was not cold, but cooling. The current was not strong, but gently pushing. The depth of the water was not deep, but easily walkable. The sand bed beneath our feet was firm and distinct, making us walk up to a level of ankle-deep water or gradually downhill to knee-height water, and so on. I began to relax as I followed behind, glad that I was becoming acquainted with the pressure of the river current against me, sure that with time I would soon become master of it as I learned its ways, and that this, too, would become a water I could be sure of, as I believed I had some understanding of the waters of lakes and of seas. And then the muddy bottom began. David turned and told me about it before I stepped into it. "It's a bit muddy here," he said. "No big deal." I had certainly stepped into mud before, and so I rolled my eyes at his even having to say this to me. And just at the moment of the eye roll, I heard David say, as he strolled ahead of me, "Whoops, now it's getting deep, and the current is very strong now. This is where a river gets interesting." "It's how people die," he shouted across his shoulder. "Stepping off a ledge of a sandbank into deep water and getting carried away." Interesting, strong current, die. These were the words I heard and latched onto. David was using his instructor to student voice, explaining everything to me while simultaneously being pulled out and away from me. I immediately froze and felt panicky, muddy bottom oozing between my toes. I felt myself sinking. I called to him to come back, and he just called to me to venture out and give it a try. "If your feet get pulled out from under you, just relax and float and go toward the shore." It sounded simultaneously reasonable and insane. Venture out? Willingly put myself in danger? If my feet get pulled out from under me, just go with it without any way of controlling the situation at all or determining where I'm going to end up? Who thinks like this? Who is this madman who is happily floating along in the well-known dangerous river and asking me to join him? I was a lake swimmer. We don't do this sort of thing. I scanned the bank for a place where we had come down, for that opening in the grasses that would mark safety and security. We hadn't gone too far from this. I knew it, but I couldn't see it. All I could see was a strong current rushing itself past the shore, not waiting, not slowing down, David paddling and talking and demonstrating to me how now it was over his head. Whoops, that got deep all of a sudden, 10 feet at least. The shoreline, which had previously seemed almost seductively beautiful to me, the myriad grasses, their long stems curved heavily, lush and dense, hanging just above the floating glass surface of the peaceful river that Robert Frost once wrote about, now became to my eyes the swampy, dangerous landscape from the African Queen, and I was not in the boat with Humphrey Bogart, but actually stranded in the strong waters of the Wisconsin River with no way to get to shore. I called again to David, who was now clambering up the bank quite a ways away, waving to me with delight, calling out, "See, it's okay, you can do it, don't panic." "Too late," I called out. "You have to come and get me. I can't do it. I'm afraid." I made tiny attempts to shift out of the mud, all the while feeling the menacing water increase its pressure against me. I finally felt sand beneath my right foot as I slid it yet again to the side and relaxed with relief to be finding a way to at least be out of the mud, if not yet out of the river. I then moved my left foot and found myself stepping not to the right but straight ahead, where the sandbank suddenly sloped downward. The water was immediately above my waist and rising. The rush of it forcing its way past me took me by surprise, and I called out to David to come and get me as I made myself stand strongly against the current and not allow it to pull me from where I was. I was terrified. I didn't want to get pulled out into the stronger current. I couldn't trust that I would do the right thing if that happened, that I would stay calm, that I could allow myself to just float. I believed with all my heart that I would flail and panic and drown. I scanned my mind and my body, but I had no past experience like this to draw from to help me out. My unconscious mind was not kicking in, and my conscious mind had nothing from the past to help me. This was not a lake or a brackish sea or even a rocky tumbling creek pouring over a water road. I was now clearly out of my element, needing to be rescued by someone else. And just then, David was at my side, taking hold of my hand and asking me to trust him. As mother and friend and minister, I am used to often being the rescuer, the wise one, the capable one, the one whose hand someone can take, the one who can be trusted to lead them to safer ground. Trust me, I would say. Now it was I holding tightly to David's hand and needing to trust him. But it's hard to trust when you don't have control, when there are so many unknowns and variables at each step of the way. And when someone other than you has the answers, has the experience, the background, and the know-how, how do you allow that to be? Standing in the rushing water, holding David's hand and hearing his repeated words to me that everything will be okay, to trust him, I suddenly understood that what I needed to do more than anything else was to do just that. Trust him as I have asked others to trust me, to believe that way will follow way. And it did, and we made it safely to the sandy ledge on the other side. Until that day on the riverbank, I thought I understood quite a bit about water and swimming and what to expect from myself in that element. I could never have imagined wanting anything other than to continue being a lake swimmer or a sea splasher or a creek jumper, to be anything other than who I already was. But what I learned in that moment of great uncertainty and fear was that lake swimmers or other swimmers of more predictable bodies of water were not necessarily the best people to rely on for the realities of life in all cases, because they may want to fight the current rather than going with the flow, and they may panic when the unexpected arrives. And so I resolved to become a river swimmer, to learn about the sands that shift underfoot and move, to gain the wisdom to understand that although we are constantly striving to have the ground beneath our feet in life be solid and sure, that sometimes it's mucky and can pull us down and down and down. And as a river swimmer, I wanted to learn to assess life from all angles, not only from just how the surface looks, but with an understanding that there's an undercurrent that is constantly moving beneath us all in life, and to not take for granted that there will be smooth sailing ahead, because that might not be necessarily the case at all. Indeed, it rarely is the case. So what is the case? The case is that spring follows winter, summer follows spring. Winter comes again, and every day brings us things unknown and unknown and known and known and unknown. And as we travel along, we learn things, we make choices, we take chances, we make decisions, we strive toward the best of who we are. And in order to do this, we must have faith. We must have courage and hope. And we must remember that the unknown is there for us to learn from, and only in the learning can we become the best of who we are. And spring is here to remind us of all of that. Hallelujah. Please join now in singing our last hymn of the day, number 363, Alleluia Sang the Stars. And we are going to sing this two times through, and please stand as you are able. Well, this is the time in our service when we have a polylog, a chance to discuss the service or to say anything that you would like to.
I heard a long time ago from someone that you have a choice. You can cling to the rocks in the river and get beat to death, or you can just let go and flow and see what happens and relax and just float down the river in life. And I took that to heart. So I'm the one, like David says, just go, like get out there and see what happens. And that was just a little conversation I had with someone, I believe that's true. And I really enjoyed your sermon. That was very accurate. Thanks.
Well, getting quick ahead of you, Jerry, my name's Barb. I think all of us spend so much time trying to keep fear away from us. And it is fear that takes us to new places.
I'm Jerry, and your talk brought back a lot of memories of when I was a kid. I grew up along the Wisconsin River, and in the summer, that's where we were every day. And back then, the river was so polluted from all the paper mills and the municipalities, you couldn't go swimming in it. It was just horrible. And now it's cleaned up, and the water, you can swim in it, and you can fish in it. The water is still brown, but the reason for the brown is that coloration comes from the tamarack trees up north, so that's just a natural brown color. But our church, we used to have canoe outings in the summer on the Wisconsin, and I think it would be nice if we did that again this year.
I might go.
I'm Colleen, and I'm new to the congregation, and I'd simply like to say thank you. I haven't felt this much at peace in a long time.
Hi, I'm Mark, and along with Jerry, we talked about on the retreat a couple weeks ago, organizing a Wolf River whitewater rafting trip. So I'll be doing that. For those of you who really want to take risks, it's a rubber raft. You get instructions. It's really a lot of fun. So.
My name is Lynn. I've come to look forward to uncharted territory. And Phil and I, we celebrated our 25th anniversary and went to St. John's, U.S. Virgin Islands, and we snorkeled a lot, but then decided, I decided, I was so proud of myself, I want to snorkel at night. It was pitch black, the surf was high, there were rocks, there were, I was doing pretty good and holding Phil's hand with a light until there were these really big stingray. So I'm like, this is another, you know, sermon maybe here. Well, it reminded me of your sermon, and I might, you know, bid on that at the next auction. But what I come to learn with uncharted territory is that I think it's people who really help you through that, even though you start doing things alone, that people are there to help support along the way. And we should probably, in fairness, Jerry, with the Wisconsin River trip, we had a huge storm and tents fell down. There's a story there, too.
Thank you for telling the truth, Lynn.
I'm Al. I've been on those calm river trips. Jerry, the gentleman behind you, had to hold his tent with his hands while the... Oh. Tom was walking around holding tent pegs in his hand saying, why me, why me? There'll be another opportunity for our congregation to stretch and grow in the water, and that is a Fowler Lake canoe and kayak cleanup of garbage. So the fear of reaching into the cold water to pull out the... At any rate, on your message today, I get the going with the flow. I get challenged by the relaxing portion of that.
I do too.
So I have a short story. Some of you may have seen my truck, which is really crappy looking, but fairly dependable if I turn the lights off at night. But I got it in Santa Monica, California, when I was living in Berkeley, and from a guy who was a surfer guy, and he needed to sell the truck because he needed money for rent. And I went down there, and talking about going with the flow, he invited me to go surfing with him, and I went surfing. The only time I've gone surfing in my life, at like 10 o'clock at night, and the waves were like 8 feet. But I completely trusted this guy, and it turned out to be an amazing experience. It just sort of, sometimes those things going with the flow is really fun.
Hi, I'm Manoush, and this reminded me of the difference that perspective makes, I guess. When I was pretty young, through my whole childhood, we lived on the very southern tip where the Niagara Escarpment comes around the Fond du Lac area and then kind of dips back up, and we lived across the street from that on the cliff. And when we were kids, we would climb down the edge of the cliff face across the road, and it was probably from the top of the riverbed, which was really only ran about once a year and turned into a waterfall, to the very, very bottom point where there's a creek that runs all year, was probably about 30 feet, but it wasn't a completely dead drop. It was kind of a staggered drop and all tumbled rock and caves. And so kind of a great area to rock climb when you're a very small child and your parents let you do whatever you want. And when we were kids, we would sleep overnight on the edge of the cliff and on the riverbed and, go down and sit in the caves and read and whatever. And quite a few years ago, I had a friend, my best friend, visit, and she had brought her another friend's children with her who were probably 4 and 6. And she said, let's go on an adventure. Let's take the kids and go out and explore and climb and, you know. And she didn't grow up out in the country, so I'm like, sure. So we went off and we went down the river. She wanted to go climb down and go rock climbing. And she realized once we were about halfway down that maybe rock climbing in unknown territory with small children is not that wise. Which, I mean, when I was four, we got to do that. But to her, I mean, I was completely like, this is fine, we're fine. But she was very nervous. And so it was kind of the same thing, you know, your perspective really, for her, she relaxed after a while, and I think she really enjoyed it. But the kids loved it. And years later, out of the blue, they were in the car with her and with their mother. And they said, and this was, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years later, and the four-year-old, who was at that time, had been four but maybe was eight, said, Stacy, do you remember when you took us into those caves? And she was like, what? And she remembered that she had done this completely foolish thing and taken these little children rock climbing. And their mother was just like, what are you talking about? Because, of course, she had never told her that she took her kids down this. And so, but for them, they have this great memory of this experience that Stacy was completely frozen with terror throughout the whole thing. So,
hi, my name is Kaz. I think I shared this story before with the congregation when I went scuba diving and I just froze in Lake Michigan, about 70 some feet of water, and it was cold, at like 40 degrees water. That was my wreck diving test. And I froze. I was so scared that I couldn't move. I couldn't let go of the line. And I couldn't even take a breath. I was that scared. And at that time, I think I made it. If, you know, you're going to take me today, take me quick, painlessly. And that moment, it was a complete peace that came over me. I don't know why it came over me, but I was let go of the rope and then go onto the, you know, assignment and do what I had to do to get a certification for wreck diver. I don't know why I wanted that. And today's service, I had this awe moment. And I just realized now the reason I felt so peace was I knew I had a faith, for whatever reason, that beyond that scary moment, if I died, I would be okay. And I was like, holy cow, that is the reason I felt so peace. This is a moment for me. Thank you.
I'm Eric. Thanks, Jane. I appreciate that the lesson here is if you really want to stretch yourself and really challenge yourself, rather than go far overseas, you stay right in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's a cool kind of interpretation there, Eric. How long have you lived here? Yeah.
Jane, I just want to thank you for your sermons that continue to inspire, illuminate, entertain. They're wonderful. But I have to tell you about my experience 30 years ago with whitewater rafting on the Wolf River. It was high water, and I was the only person that was flipped out of the raft. And for some reason, I grabbed onto a rope. And so the raft dragged me across the rocks. If I would have let go of that rope and relied on my own ability to swim, which was good, I would have been okay. I carry the scars today. So that was a snap judgment. It was not a good judgment to grab that rope. So what could you tell me about that?
Well, you know what? I have something really deep and profound to say, but unfortunately our service is over. So thank you for all of your thoughts. Now is time for the benediction, and the choir is going to sing Alle, Alle, Alleluia.
Lead me from death to life, from falsehood to truth. Lead me from despair to hope, from fear to trust. Lead me from hate to love, from war to peace. Let peace fill our hearts, our world, our universe. Amen.